This is Ann Weller with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. During the next 30 minutes, I will be sharing nutrition information with you. This information is selected from the Nutrition Action Health Letter, a publication of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, based in Washington, D.C. The Center for Science in the Public Interest was founded in 1971 by three scientists who wanted to apply their academic training to the solving of social problems. The center staff conduct innovative research and other programs in health and nutrition, and they provide consumers with current information about their health and well-being. An independent, nonprofit consumer health group, the Center for Science in the Public Interest promotes honest food labeling and advertising, safer and more nutritious foods, and pro-health alcohol policies. The work of the Center for Science in the Public Interest is supported by Nutrition Action Health Letter subscribers and by foundation grants. It accepts no government or industry funding. And Nutrition Action Health Letter, which was first published in 1974, accepts no advertising. The following edition of Nutrition News is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. The cover story of the December 2011 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter is entitled Eat Smart. Which foods are good for what? And in this report, Director of Nutrition Bonnie Liebman discusses current knowledge regarding which foods lower or raise the risk of some key health problems. Some foods gain a reputation for protecting against disease, thanks to clever marketing or popular diet books, or because your grandmother said so. In fact, it is rare that a single food can help. But some foods or classes of foods can make a difference, and they are not necessarily those with the big advertising budgets. Here's what we know about which foods lower or raise the risk of some key health problems. Can help reduce cholesterol, promise boxes of Honey Nut Cheerios. Proven to help reduce cholesterol, claim cartons of Minute Maid Heartwise orange juice. What gives you the biggest bang for your buck when it comes to lowering LDL, the bad cholesterol? Cheerios gets the most airtime, but the soluble fiber in oats is not exactly Lipitor. The soluble fiber in any single food has only a modest impact on LDL cholesterol, explains Alice Lichtenstein, director of the Cardiovascular Nutrition Laboratory at the Jean Mayer USDA Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University in Boston. However, if you are eating beans, fruits, vegetables, oats, and other foods with soluble fiber, instead of burgers and pizza and shakes, then it adds up to a sizable benefit. The plant sterols that are added to some juices, margarines, and yogurts make an even bigger dent. There's good evidence that these plant sterols decrease LDL cholesterol levels on average by about 10%, notes Dr. Lichtenstein. And that is very significant. You get maximal lowering with about 2 grams a day. And with 3 grams a day, you do not get much more. But neither soluble fiber nor plant sterols matters the most. The important thing is when saturated or trans fat is replaced by unsaturated fat. says Lichtenstein, who is vice chair of the expert panel that is now updating the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute's clinical guidelines on the detection, evaluation, and treatment of high blood cholesterol in adults. Polyunsaturated fats win out over monounsaturated fats because they lower LDL cholesterol a bit more, explains Dr. Lichtenstein. But that is fine-tuning. What that means is replacing butter with high poly oils like soybean, corn, and sunflower, or with high mono oils like canola, olive, and safflower. It also means replacing red meat and cheese with poultry and fish. However, you do not want to swap a steak for a high-carb bihydrate dish like a plate of pasta. If you're going to decrease saturated and trans fat, you do not want to substitute carbohydrates because they can raise triglycerides, notes Dr. Lichtenstein. When triglycerides go up, HDL, or good cholesterol, typically goes down. It's a sort of yin-yang metabolically, she says. People with high triglycerides and low HDL have a higher risk of heart disease. Carbohydrates are more likely to raise triglycerides in some people than in others, adds Lichtenstein. People who are overweight tend to be more carb-sensitive. And does that apply to all carbs? Well, no one has done the ultimate study, says Dr. Lichtenstein. People assume that whole grains are not as bad as refined grains, but the literature is very thin. In any case, it is smarter to cut back on sodas, sweets, and refined grains than on healthier carbs. You would hate to see somebody decrease fruits and vegetables, beans, and non-fat dairy because of their carbs, she says. But you can prepare the beans with some oil or put salad dressing on vegetables. Just don't get carried away, says Dr. Lichtenstein. The key word is replace. Just pouring some soybean oil over a hot fudge sundae is not going to help, she cautions. You need to make sure that the oil is replacing an equal number of calories from some other food. Otherwise, you'll gain weight, and that will increase your LDL cholesterol, decrease your HDL, prompt insulin resistance, and increase blood pressure, she points out. Since the majority of people are already overweight, that's the last thing you want to do. And the same holds true for margarine with added sterols. You cannot just decide, well, I'm going to use this great margarine to lower my cholesterol, so boy, I can really spread it on, she says. That's the concern I always have when you say that any food is good for you. Nuts are rich in polyunsaturated fats, but they pose the same problem. People think of them as add-ons, and that's the way they are advertised, says Dr. Lichtenstein. The ads suggest, throw some on your salad, throw them in your yogurt, throw them in your cereal in the morning. But remember, just a quarter cup of most nuts has 150 to 230 calories. They're extremely calorie dense. So pouring some out of a bottle, especially if they are salted, you have to be very careful. What is worst for your cholesterol? Both saturated and trans fat. Now, I'm not willing to say that one is worse than the other, because the amount of saturated fat you get in foods like meat, cheese, cream, and butter is much higher than the amount of trans fat you get in partially hydrogenated oils, says Dr. Lichtenstein. If you directly compared 10 grams of each, the trans fat would be worse. But that's not what happens in food. In recent years, much of the trans fat in supermarket foods has disappeared. But it still shows up in some pie crusts, microwave popcorns, frozen pizzas, biscuits, margarines, and cookies. And it's still in all the major brands of frosting. And restaurant foods, from some pastries, pies, and cookies, to some fried potatoes, fried chicken, and fried fish, still have trans fats because there are no nutrition facts labels to spill the beans. These cupcakes that are popping up in stores may be a good poster child for bad fats, says Dr. Lichtenstein. It does not matter if they're made with butter or partially hydrogenated oils, because both are bad. And those bad fats come with refined flour and sugar. The cupcakes look like they're half frosting, Dr. Lichtenstein notes, and they are a concentrated source of calories. Now let's talk about protecting your eyes. What is good for your eyes is good for the rest of you. Eat a variety and abundance of colorful plant foods, advises Julie Mayers, professor of ophthalmology at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. But what if you had to single out one group of foods? Well, at the top of my list are dark leafy greens, says Dr. Mayers. That means spinach, kale, collards, and Swiss chard. Peas, broccoli, and other green vegetables may also help. And that is because dark leafy greens are rich in lutein and its cousin, zeaxanthin. They are the predominant carotenoids in both the lens and the retina, and specifically in the cone-rich area of the macula, says Dr. Mayers. And that's the part of retina that's used to see fine detail, like reading a pill bottle or newspaper. Age-related macular degeneration is the major cause of blindness in older people. And the lens is where cataracts form. By age 75, half of us will either have a visually significant cataract or already have had one extracted, says Dr. Mayers. It's the number one cause of poor vision among people aged 65 to 74. A number of studies have found a lower risk of cataracts and advanced macular degeneration in people who consume more lutein and zeaxanthin. There is strong, compelling evidence for a potential protective effect of these carotenoids, notes Dr. Mayers. But it's not a done deal, because something else in leafy greens could explain their link to healthy eyes. They are nutritional powerhouses, explains Dr. Mayers. They have gobs of antioxidants. And another possibility is that lutein may be a marker for people who eat healthy plant-rich diets, she suggests. And something else about those diets, or the people who eat them, may explain their lower risk of eye disease. Now, second on Dr. Mayer's list of possible eye protectors, she says, I would add oily fish. That means foods like salmon, sardines, and mackerel. There is a strong, consistent body of evidence that people who eat fish of this type are less likely to have macular degeneration, she notes. People are jumping to the conclusion that it's their omega-3s that matter, But it may also be other things, like their vitamin D, or selenium, or both. What might boost your risk of cataracts and macular degeneration, other than smoking and excess sunlight? Refined sugars and starches, offers Dr. Mayers. The most compelling reason is that they are strongly associated with poor diets, she explains. In other words, their empty calories replace nutrient-rich foods. For example, if you had one 500-calorie Dunkin' Donuts blueberry muffin a day, in place of nutrient-dense foods, the muffin would reduce your lutein and zeaxanthin every day to 75% of what it would be otherwise. And you would also get less of the vitamins and minerals that are in the healthier foods that you gave up. It's not that refined sugars or white bread are bad, adds Dr. Mayers. It's that they go along with a reduced intake of many nutrients. So in my mind, they are anti-vitamins. And if you ate the 500-calorie muffin, or bagel, or scone, or cupcake, or whatever, in addition to your ordinary diet, you would gain weight. And obesity leads to the inflammatory and oxidative stress that also increases your risk of eye disease, says Dr. Mayers. And that is absolutely a problem. Now let's talk about using your diet to dodge colon cancer. Milk probably reduces colon cancer risk, concluded the World Cancer Research Fund and the American Institute for Cancer Research in May. However, they added, the American Institute of Cancer Research does not make a recommendation to consume more dairy foods because the evidence for overall cancer risk remains unclear. A meta-analysis of 19 studies found a lower risk of colon cancer in people who consume more milk. Now, an 8-ounce glass of milk has 300 milligrams of calcium, so people who consume more dairy tend to get more calcium. What's more, when researchers gave calcium, that is 1,200 milligrams a day, to people with a history of colon polyps, which can turn into tumors, they were 20% less likely to get new polyps than similar people who were given a placebo. And the calcium takers still had a lower risk of polyps 5 years after the trial was stopped. So how might milk or calcium protect the colon? Well, it may lower cell proliferation in the lining of the colon, says Dr. Amanda Cross, an investigator in the Division of Cancer Epidemiology and Genetics at the National Cancer Institute in Bethesda, Maryland. Increased proliferation can elevate cancer risk. But the American Institute of Cancer Research also decided that foods containing dietary fiber, such as fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans, reduce the risk of colorectal cancer. However, when the polyp prevention trial told people with a history of colon polyps to eat less fat and more whole grains, beans, fruits, and vegetables, they had no fewer new polyps. And in the wheat bran fiber trial, people who were told to eat a wheat bran cereal had no fewer new polyps than those who were told to eat a low-fiber cereal. Now, it's possible that their fiber intake did not increase enough, says Dr. Cross. Her research focuses on the potential harm from red meat, beef, pork, and lamb, and processed meats like ham, bacon, pastrami, salami, hot dogs, and sausages. each of which the American Institute of Cancer Research calls a convincing cause of colon cancer. The recommendation from the World Cancer Research Fund and the American Institute of Cancer Research is to limit red meat to 18 ounces per week and to avoid processed meats, notes Dr. Cross, who was a reviewer for the American Institute of Cancer Research's 2011 report. If a person eats 3.5 ounces of red meat every day, that is 24.5 ounces of red meat every week, their risk of colorectal cancer will be 17% higher than someone who eats no red meat, noted the American Institute of Cancer Research. And doubling the amount of meat would double the risk. But processed meats are worse. If a person eats 3.5 ounces of processed meat every day, says the American Institute of Cancer Research, their risk of colorectal cancer will be 36% higher than someone who eats no processed meat. Now, what are the best foods for staying regular? Wheat bran is at the top of the list, followed by other brands like rye, corn, and oat, says Joanne Slavin, professor of food science and nutrition at the University of Minnesota. And that is because much of the fiber in wheat bran, celluloses and hemicelluloses, survives the trip through your gut. Probably half of it is still there at the end, explains Dr. Slavin. And they bind to water, so they have the most effect on stool weight. But all wheat brands are not alike. The coarser ones increase stool weight more, says Dr. Slavin. If you grind beans up into smaller particles, it doesn't have as much of an effect. Stool weight is a better way to gauge a food's impact on regularity than transit time. That is, the time it takes for food to go from one end of the GI tract to the other. Transit time is difficult to measure, and it does not tell you much because people are in the 24 to 48-hour normal range, most people are, explains Dr. Slavin. Beans have far more fiber than fruits or vegetables, and so they are significantly important in the maintenance of regularity in addition to brands. Some beans have 6 or 7 grams of fiber in a half cup, and a serving of most fruits and vegetables has only 2 or 3 grams of fiber. And that is because they're mostly water. Lowest on Dr. Slavin's list of foods that are useful in the maintenance of regularity, lowest on the list, are white fibers that are purified, like pectin and inulin, Fiber One yogurt, Kellogg's Fiber Plus bars, and other high-fiber bars get much of their fiber from inulin. And the purified fibers are pretty much all broken down by the end, explains Dr. Slavin. There is zero fiber left in the fecal samples, so they do not have a big role in increasing stool weight. These isolated fibers also generate some microflora that binds to water, but it's much less than what you get from wheat bran, says Dr. Slavin. Worse yet, isolated fibers cause more gas. Now, with wheat bran, some of the fiber is fermented, but it happens slowly throughout the colon, notes Dr. Slavin. Fibers like inulin are completely broken down really quickly high in the colon, so they cause more intestinal gas and bloating. And what about those old standbys, prunes and prune juice? Prunes absolutely work, says Dr. Slavin. In a pilot study that she never published, stool frequency increased in 10 people who consumed either 5 prunes or 6 ounces of prune juice every day. But it is not just fiber that explains the magic of prunes. Their naturally occurring sugar alcohol, sorbitol, might also make a difference. Now, sorbitol is a possibility because the sugar alcohols absolutely have an effect on laxation, explains Dr. Slavin. However, prunes significantly increase flatulence. So that would seem to leave wheat bran in the lead of foods that favorably affect regularity. All bran cereal works, says Dr. Slavin. Psyllium also works. And that's the fiber in Metamucil and in cereals like bran buds. As for food, I would go with whole grain, Dr. Slavin says. But not foods that are made with whole grain, which are mostly white flour. That does not mean the sky's the limit. Many people are eating whole grain cookies, cereals, and breads that are very high in calories, notes Dr. Slavin. They are not going to get healthier. They're going to gain weight. And her only other caution is that bran works well for healthy people. But you would never want to give a bunch of bran to someone who is constipated. There are studies where people take way too much bran, and it gets impacted because nothing moves. You have to deal with the constipation before you get back to fiber. Prevention is better than the cure. What's worse for the maintenance of regularity? Dr. Slavin says that foods don't have much impact, but iron supplements and many medications are constipating. Now, to keep blood pressure in check, I would emphasize fresh fruits and vegetables that are high in potassium, says Norman Kaplan, professor of internal medicine at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. Topping the list are green leafy vegetables like spinach, Swiss chard, and beet greens, and deep orange vegetables like butternut squash and sweet potatoes. Bananas, cantaloupe, and mushrooms are also potassium-packed, and so are fish, beans, milk, and yogurt. Well, folks, we've reached the conclusion of this month's segment of Nutrition News, and the show will be rebroadcast this week on Friday at 11 p.m. and on Saturday at 3 p.m. Please join me for the next edition of Nutrition News, which will air on Wednesday, February 1st. I'm Ann Weller, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and I hope that you enjoy the show. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next month.